Good evening and welcome to a Terrace Talk special. It's an end of year special, of course. My name is Donal Barry, and over the next 2 hours, we'll bring you back through the year that was 2022. What was your highlight of the year? Was it Kerry's All-Ireland win? Well, certainly for most it would be. How about the Warriors getting that league and cup double? Or maybe it was Kerry FC's acceptance into the League of Ireland and the hopes of 2023 for them. I would like to wish you all a very happy new year, and we look forward to 2023, where we'll bring you again some of the biggest and best interviews once more. Now, this programme is pre-recorded, so please don't call or text in. But first up tonight, we bring you back to March of this year, as Tralee RTC, as it was known then, remember the team of their 25th anniversary, a historic Segerson win of 1997. Now, two Kerry men joined me on that night, both on opposing ends of the field on the day of the game, and they joined me to remember that special day, and that, of course, was Tralee RTC captain Eamon Ferris from up the road in Ardfert, and University of Limerick forward Dara O'Kaneda, all the way back from West Kerry.
Good evening, Donald.
Fair play. Well, I suppose we were start with the winning captain, I suppose, Eamon. Is it still one of your great memories, you know, getting up, putting your hands on the cup, bringing the Segerson back, traipsing around Ardfert with it and the whole lot, or is it like all things that happened out there, it was just a magic moment in time?
Well, firstly, I don't know which is more shocking, winning the Segerson Cup in 1997 or the fact that 25 years have passed.
The 25 you know, years is definitely shocking, isn't it?
It's shocking. Just when you see it, it hits you. Yeah, it's definitely one of the most memorable winning. The Segerson Cup was just something that will always stay in the memories, and it's just one of those things, especially when we were I suppose we were in RTC, and I think previous 2 years before that we just won the Trench Cup, which enabled us to play in the Segerson, and I suppose I think I might be wrong in saying this, but I think we're the only RTC ever to win a Segerson Cup. I might be wrong in saying that, because I know after 97 they became IT, mm-hmm. and now they're MTU, obviously. So yeah, it was definitely one of those great memories, no question about that.
Yeah, I suppose your memories at the time, I suppose, look, 25 years passes fairly quickly. You obviously went from school into Tralee RTC. I mean, the team was there to be picked. I suppose you were playing with Ardfert and the whole lot. What are your memories of we'll say the early training sessions, getting picked for the team? Who was there? Who was Val Andrews there at the time? He was, of course, wasn't he?
Well, I suppose after that, I suppose going into the RTC, this fella landed up to me one day. I was inside there, I suppose. I was probably playing. I would have been playing with Dara with the minors, and Val comes up, and to be honest, when you meet Val and talk to Val, you swear you know him all your life. But he had a great admiration for Kerry football, and he felt that he was in, I suppose, the cream of the crop, where footballers are a dime a dozen, and he just more or less said one day, we got to aim for the Segerson Cup. I didn't know him for Adam, and I was looking at him as if to say, who's this Jackeen, maybe, what way of putting it. And he just had a vision, I suppose, and he had unbelievable knowledge when it came to football, and he knew more about Kerry football than I probably knew myself. So he kind of, I genuinely thought he was losing the rocks when he came up with these statements and stuff like that, but he was right. He had a vision, and it did work out. Big time.
And on the other side of the coin, of course, Dara O'Kaneda, you were above in UL. They hadn't got to a final in a while either, maybe, or certainly haven't gone to a final in so long since. What were your first memories of getting in with UL in training? You were there maybe a couple of years beforehand against Queens, maybe. You kind of had the remnants of kind of a half-decent team or a strong team, maybe.
We were done, I suppose. I would have started college in 93, late 93, early 94 in UL, and it was very much a Kerry college. Even that 97 team that you mentioned was, I would say, we actually had more Kerry players than the Tralee team had. You know, there was a huge Kerry contingent on both sides. But I suppose in 93, 94, we won the All-Ireland Fresher for the first time in the history of ULGA club. And it was our first time ever reaching the final in 97 then, because we had reached the semi-final, went extra time, got beaten by Anthony Toole with the last kick of the game in extra time in 94. But that first, the nucleus of that Freshers team in 93-94 had kind of formed a very strong bond right throughout all 3 or 4 years in college, and it was definitely a target of ours to try and win the Sigerson, and we felt we would have won it only for came up against a really strong Tralee team at the time. And I suppose the Kerry lads, some of us would have been very aware of what was going on in Tralee at the time, because you had the likes of Pat Flanagan, Val Andrews, even Ibrahim was involved, the physio who was involved with Kerry as well. And you know, you were coming across these lads, some of the lads that were playing were all best friends off, you know, inside football, like, you know, that we were playing against. And it got to the point where our captain was Morgan O'Shea from Tralee, and his playing full back for us, and the full back on the other side of the field was his brother Barry, who was playing with Kerry as well at the time. Morgan and Barry were on that 97 team. But I suppose the vivid memory I would have had, it was, you mentioned the final was played above in Coleraine. And I remember, you know, there was something special starting in Kerry football at the time as well, with Paddy O'Shea, the year, you know, the 11 years was I suppose closed off at later on that year in 1997. But Paddy and Seamus McGarrett travelled all the way up to Coleraine to watch the game. And I remember Bill Kirby got to be good to him, was a fanatical follower of the Tralee RTC team, because William was there as well. William was probably a fan of the match in the final. And he had, of course, nobody promoted the brogue in better than Bill Kirby. He had the brogue in behind both goals, I think, for, you know, and it wasn't, I think those days the games weren't even televised. Like, but as much as Eamon was mentioning there, it's been a highlight of his career. It's very much something that still eats away at me. It's one medal I would love to have.
That's interesting.
And you know, we were very disappointed. Actually, a big gang of us went to the Sigerson final a couple of weeks ago above in Carlow to hope that David Clifford and his comrades could, you know, finally get over the line for UL, because we did form a very strong bond in UL. That bond would still be very, very strong. And ironically enough, our trainer for our fourth year and for that Sigerson team in 97 was David's uncle, Fergus Clifford. Nice. And himself and Dave Mahidi had us trained to the last that time. But on the day, we were well beaten. We were well off it, like, and it was bitterly disappointing, like, because, you know, we had spent 4 years in each other's company in college, and we had hoped, you know, having won the Freshers 3 or 4 years previously, that this would be the one, like, and it's one that's known in All-Ireland club medal, or the two, who, you know, that escaped me and a few more of us over the course of the years, and you'd love to have it, like, but we couldn't be bitter towards Tralee, because a lot of the lads that were playing were friends of ours and teammates of ours and on a county scene, like, and, you know, they went on to win three more after us. One small bit of satisfaction that I got personally was when I had finished the 4 years in UL, I went on to do another couple of years in Mary I afterwards, and we beat Tralee when they were going for 4 in a row in 2000. Like, that was a small consolation, but I would dearly have loved to have won that one 25 years ago in Coleraine.
Well, one man who has the medal in his pocket or on his window or somewhere is Eamon. Eamon, talk to us about the build-up. I mean, I suppose at that time, the Sigerson, much like the O'Connor Cup for the ladies at the moment, is kind of a weekend away, so you play kind of two games over 2 days. Today, that's kind of totally frowned upon, I'd imagine. But the system then, you went up. So talk to us about, you know, heading off from Tralee up to Coleraine. I mean, obviously, it's a long way up, maybe the bus journey or something. And who'd you beat in the semi-final, maybe, even?
We played, actually what we did, I suppose we were probably unknown at the time, but leading up to that, we actually started playing, we played Queens the first game, and we beat them above in UCD, above in the Belfry. And then we played UCD after that, who were, I think, holders at the time. So we beat them above there as well, which, in, you know, obviously after that, then we head to Coleraine. Sligo were the only other RTC as well, I think, that were there. Sligo, we played Sligo first, and I think it was UL and Coleraine that were playing after, as Dara's crowd would say. But Sligo, I think if I remember rightly, we played them in the League Cup final after that as well, and had beaten us. I suppose we were thinking we might have beaten them, but there was a good team. Actually, Dara would have come across Eamon O'Hara. He was playing with Sligo that day. We just barely got over the line. I think, if I can remember, Seamus was injured against UCD. He gave an exhibition. He was marking Trevor Giles at the time, and I think he burst his nose.
Right.
And he had it wired up, is right. But I think he came on against Sligo, because we were under pressure. We were under pressure to get there. I think I had moved in centre back, and I think Mac Gowan came on there, and then Seamus came in and obviously steadied the ship, and you know, and we just got over the line with that one just about. So we had beaten them that day, and then obviously it was for the final the next day against you. Well, like Darren said, we were all friends, we all knew everyone, and it was one of these things that, you know, you couldn't begrudge anyone. Like obviously the two O'Shea brothers, it was tough for his parents, obviously, with one was going to lose anyway. Lucky enough it was us in the end, but it was I suppose we were just that bit better on the day. The only thing I can remember, all right, is that I remember Des Cahill made some comment about us one time that we were like ragamuffins, that we were bringing our own shorts and we had different colour this and different colour that. Missing, obviously, the fact that we didn't have, you know, all the gear and so on and so forth. But, you know, it was just the way it worked out that we had some, I suppose, a great bunch of lads that actually came up and worked out in the end.
You were the Wimbledon of your time, was it?
Something like that, yeah. Well, you had, you know, you like that, like I said about Val. Val had the knowledge and the vision, and Pat Flanagan had all the tools. You know, he changed the, I suppose, the method of training from what it was to what it is now. And you know, I suppose you can't beat that. And obviously the early 7 o'clock, 7:30 training mornings, and you know, it was just a match made in heaven with the boys, in fairness, and then a good few lads that came along then, you know.
Mm-hmm. Dara, you kind of touched on there earlier, there's a certain magic about college that isn't kind of club, yeah. and club is different and county is different and development squads or whatever, but it's great to be able to kind of talk about something that happened 25 years ago. And it was very funny because you brought up Fergus Clifford there. Now Fergus Clifford, of course, was back in Carsby with myself, of course, and we were getting slaughtered by the best of the West nearly every year. I never realised that he was the manager. Now he said take it easy on him tonight. Yeah. Okay, it wasn't his fault for the loss either. But the one thing about it is that fellas can kind of meet up fairly randomly, and you know, you have friends in Meath and Donegal and Sligo and the whole lot, and you can remember these games out of the blue. What's your memory of that game in particular? Because I got a quote off you that you kind of gave, possibly maybe in fairly haste to have after the game, maybe. You said that you, after coming back strongly, you had thought that you had done enough work to get back into the game, but obviously truly ran out the gap there in the second bit. Was that your memory of it?
Yeah, even though I remember they finished very strongly, you know, they had Jeannie Farrell and brought on Hannah from these two West Kerry lads as well, like, you know, they did wreck towards the end, you know, but Kirby dominated midfield as well, you know, he was outstanding. And that was the first time you kind of look at a William Kirby saying this guy is a serious inter-county footballer at this stage, you know, and I think he convinced Paddy O'Shea and Seamus McGarrell the same day as well that he was well able for that level. He had done it earlier in the league that year as well anyway, but he was coming, he was only, you know, same as myself, 21, 22 years of age. But I don't think we ever looked like winning it. I think even Patrick Dice missed a penalty as well. Dermot Murphy saved it the same day. Dermot was in goal for us at the time. But you know, the memory of it, you know, it's probably irrelevant now. Like, but what I do take away from those years is the huge strong bond that we formed. And it's something I'd lament, like in recent years, to watch how Sigerson football has been treated, because I think it's one of the best competitions in the GAA calendar, and I just think it's been shunted left and right and into corners and out of the way and getting over and done with now. And I think that's very, very wrong. You know, I think it's one of the big, big competitions. I would have played, much like Eamon said there, you know, we would have played minor and under 21 together. You're there, and it's a very high level when you play with Kerry at that level, minor and under 21. But I would say Sigerson's up another level again. It's just sort of inter-county National League. And, you know, the quality of player is there. You know, you're playing against All-Ireland medal winners. I mean, in those years, in my years in college, in Limerick in 93, 4, 5, you were talking about the Derrys, the Towns, you know, the Donegals. They were the kingpins of winning All-Irelands, like, and you're coming up against those players because they're playing with Queens and Georgetown, these colleges, and you're measuring yourself up against them. And you must remember as well, it's at a time where Kerry weren't winning senior All-Irelands, and you're saying, do you know what, we have every bit of good football in Kerry as those lads, as the Tolls, as the Henry Downies, as the James McCartans that you're coming up against in Sigerson. And you know, it kind of convinces you that, you know, we're not far off the mark either. And it gave, I honestly believe that 97 game, with two pretty much Kerry colleges and a few, you know, outsiders from other counties thrown in, gave us the confidence in Kerry to say, you know, we're not far off the mark. You watch Galway this year, you see G winning the Sigerson. Right. And you say to yourself, yeah, I've watched those lads at minor and under 20s, some of those Galway players over the years, there's something happening there as well, like, you know, and a Sigerson is just another kind of a franking of that, like, you know. So, you know, that's what it was at the time, 25 years ago. I think Sigerson was more important back then in the calendar. I think it was given greater respect at the time. I think county managers allowed you to train with your Sigerson team and say, look, if you're training at that level, as Eamon said there, at 7 in the morning, which we were as well, twice a day, you're fit enough. And that was showing through in the weekends and the National League games that you were playing with Kerry, because, you know, the college lads were always that bit fitter at that time of the year. It's different now, I suppose, where lads are fit all year round. Like, but the college lads would have been fit in January, February. You know, they weren't waiting to kind of run off the winter at that stage. You were already hitting the ground running early in the year. And, you know, I suppose we would have had perceptions and preconceptions about the game when you're 18, 19, 20, you know, what are Cork fellas like, what are fellas in Meath like. So this whole thing is opening, because you're only exposed to Kerry footballers up to that point. Then you've been exposed to what way Cork people think about football, what way Meath people, Louth people, Sligo people, you know, they're all coming to you into the same college and you're playing the same football as them, like, and how they think about football. It's a hugely formative experience, like, as a footballer. And the one big thing I would have taken from those, from that campaign and that year, was Kerry football isn't far off. And it kind of proved that later on in the year. I suppose Kerry won the All-Ireland, and you had a good scattering of those lads between UL and Free, playing with the Kerry senior team later on that year. I think Eamon might remember, even a week or two later, we played together in the McGrath Cup final. It was the only game we lost that year, against Clare over in Ennis, and there was a lot of Tralee RTC and UL boys playing the same day, you know. So it was definitely a kind of a finger post on the way to the bigger stuff for Kerry football at the time.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now, welcome back to Terrace Talk Special here this evening. Back in April, of course, having already won the McGrath Cup, the Kerry team under the stewardship of Jack O'Connor secured the National League honours, beating Mayo at Croke Park. Now, our panellists John Kennedy and Liam Broston gave their views on those proceedings.
Good evening, Donald. Yeah, you could see yesterday, I suppose, there was a lot of smiling faces coming down the steps of the Hogan Stand and the queues yesterday. I actually met one fella this morning. He was telling me it was his first time. He was sick of coming down the steps with a heavy heart, he said, but yesterday he came down with a pep in his step. Like, when you look at it, out of 12 matches, that's only our second time winning in Croke Park, you know. So that was a nice duck to break yesterday. And I thought we were after a very solid league performance throughout. Jack has rang the changes. You know, a lot of players have got a lot of time, and I think it paid off yesterday. You know, he made a lot of changes on Friday night after the defeat against Tyrone, and the guys that are hanging on to the jersey now are really battling, and, you know, our structure, defensive structure, is strong. You know, our forwards are moving well, and all things bode well so far, so good, anyway.
Mm-hmm. It's an amazing stat, Liam, when you fire it across the table that way and say, listen, it was only your second win in Croke Park in 12 outings. I suppose time marches on fairly quickly, but, I mean, if that was another county, you'd be half expecting it, but it certainly wasn't good enough. Obviously, yesterday's going to turn to small, but that was 1-11 prior to yesterday. Have we gone off the boil that much?
I suppose, Don, there's a couple of draws thrown into that as well. But yeah, look, it's no more like the little mini famine that we have, that we don't have Sam McGuire since 2014. No, Croke Park is a hard place to go when you meet the teams of the likes of Dublin and the Tyrones and the Mayos. But I think we're after kind of growing a bit of a backbone and a bit of teeth now, and I think that's thanks to Jack and probably his management team. There's something different. I know we're not going to get carried away. Everyone's saying that. Look, we're after winning the league the last 2 years, and this is our third one. And no, we'll wait until July to see what happens. But I see something different. No, travelling to games there with Timmy and Ambrose, and you've been at them as well, Dawn, up to Armagh and Monaghan and these places. No, there's that little bit of tenaciousness, and even just watching Davis yesterday, you know, even if you look at the speech after, you know, he thanked everyone, especially the ten plus guys, mm-hmm. that were sitting in the stand, that throwing the effort as well. You know, that trophy that they won yesterday, that's going to be pushed aside. You know, Kerry won't get carried away, and Jack won't even get carried away. Look, that won't be talked about. You know, believe it or not, Donald, the game against Tyrone will probably be talked about more than what the game yesterday will be talked about in Curran's. You know, so you can see it. There's something different. There's something brewing inside in the Kerry management and the Kerry panel. And like I said, it seems to be going in the right direction. No, our defensive structure, our tenaciousness, our tackling. No, I think, like, looking yesterday, our goalkeeper was very solid yesterday. No, very, no, our kickouts. No, we still have a lot of guys to come back in who's going to be fighting for jerseys. And by God, the next 3 or 4 weeks over in Kearns, they'll be skin and hair flying, because there's a lot of fellas going to be trying to get their hold their hand up. Now, they're mind to get on the first 15, or, but to get on the 24.
Absolutely. John, I think he's covered everything in the first 9 minutes. We might as well just wrap up now. I mean, he's certainly not a man to give a direct answer. John, I suppose we'll break the game down a small bit. Obviously, look, the result was fantastic and a whole lot, and Liam has kind of touched on that. We're not going to overly dwell on it. But it was a performance that, you know, certainly put an awful lot of joy back into Kerry supporters. I mean, we got goals, we got fantastic scores. Everything that we kind of associate with what a Kerry team should be in Crow Park was there yesterday. However, in the opening half, we left an awful lot of chances behind us. We missed 3 goal chances. We coughed up a lot of possession, I suppose, in times when we were on the, just about to pull the trigger. Was that eagerness of the big day, or is it more worryingly a feeling?
I'd say probably Donal, eagerness on the big day, maybe. You know, we were creating the chances. You know, we were in control all over the field, really, and we had some surging runs, particularly Gavin White. He made some fantastic runs right through the half to the defence, and Mayo had no answer to it. Our defence was in total control. Hardy Clifford also, he went through, the gap opened up a few times, and unlucky he didn't get a goal or two, but, you know, we were still creating them. We were positive. We've said it here several times, we weren't going sideways or backwards. We were going forward. We were breaking the tackle. We created the chances, and, you know, it was only a matter of time before we convert them. And we had the Mayo defence under savage pressure, and, you know, I suppose the goal really showed that, you know, how tenacious and how much Gavin White wanted it, because he put his body on the line. Mm-hmm. Paul Gainey flicking the ball, the keeper parrying it up in the air, and then bang by Gavin White, and took a challenge from Ryan Dunhove of Allman, who was back as the last man standing, we'd say. But you know, hugely impressive performance from Kerry, we have to say. And like Liam said there, you know, the pace and the intensity which we played at, our movement, the quality of ball we give in, our kick passing, you know, the vision outside, particularly our half forward line, looking up and not kicking aimless ball in, giving quality ball, chest-high ball into diagonal ball into our full forward line. And, you know, we certainly made Mayo work really, really hard. Mm-hmm. But I suppose, like Liam said, there's nobody getting carried away, because you have to look at it. Mayo were down quite a number of players. You can only play what's in front of you. And there will be a different kettle of fish again. But I think from a Kerry's point of view, that was alarming. Like, you know, getting to Croke Park and winning, putting down a marker. I think that's the big one. You know, it wasn't a victory. It was a drubbing of Mayo, regardless who they had out. And, you know, a great boost to everybody concerned, and to Jack and his management team. You know, we're on the up, and it's a great way to go into the championship.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Welcome back. Garvey's Tralee Warriors signed off a remarkable season with a league and cup double in a fantastic evening. We remember the Tigers' success of 2004, among other chats and giggles. Now, this was coach John Dowling and captain Fergal O'Sullivan speaking to us on Terrace Talk.
I suppose just firstly to say thank you to ye and, like, Alan Cantwell. I think one of the main things, the teams, was that how good the commentary was and the coverage was. It definitely puts the hairs up your neck. I actually haven't had an opportunity yet to watch back the league final, but the cup final coverage was absolutely outstanding, and we have the commentary linked in with the video, so it's even better.
Absolutely. And years to come, it'll get better and better. Fergal, I suppose the enormity of the achievement, I suppose a full 12 months on from having no season, and I suppose 2 years on from having that inverted commas Super League grasped out of the hands, maybe. This was something really special. I mean, you dug really deep, particularly towards the end of the season, to win this one. What kind of emotion was with the team going into that final?
We were very much relaxed going into the final, a little bit too much relaxed for my liking, to be totally honest. I suppose the league was different this year, and the fact that it was two conferences, and we kind of went to sleep a little bit at times during the season. which is frustrating. But it was just the nature of the league. We concentrated on the cup. We were able to concentrate the cup and table the league at times, and then it was bringing the league back onto the table. It was a bit of a problem sometimes after the cup games, but we managed it well, and I think we were always confident that we would be tough to beat in the playoffs with a full team. And that's really how it was. We just managed the season really, really well, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. And of course, speaking about managing the season really well, I'm delighted to be joined by the coach, John Dowling. John, I suppose managing a season that has so many moving parts, I mean, to get to the end of the line, I mean, what does it take? I mean, at any stage did you say this, you know, we could be in trouble here, or did you kind of know from that you were kind of closing in on something special?
I think you just kind of take it one game at a time, really. I suppose, as Fergal said it there, we kind of timetabled what we were going to do and how we were going to do it, but like, to achieve it is another thing, and you have all the other teams trying to do the exact same thing. The league is set up the same for everybody, but I suppose at the start of the year we knew we had a good group. We had depth, we had young guys coming through from both clubs that were able to play and surprised us at times as to what they were able to do. I mean, like James Fernan and Stephen Bowler and Keenan Crowe all started 3 or 4 games throughout the year, which was huge for us because you had COVID and you had injuries, and we took away points that we didn't realise how valuable they were at the time to get keep us in the top two, which gave us home advantage for the first one.
That game against Mike Cullen, that's the one that stands out for me over the course of the season, was 84-81. Aaron was flying, Fergal of course on the phone was flying, but they were surrounded by a gang of children to bring home that game. I mean, that was a very vital win. Like you said, you had Stephen Bowler, James Fernan on that. I mean, that's huge experience in a season that maybe you're kind of looking ahead to another year and the year down the line, but you obviously want to win this one as well.
Yeah, it was massive. It absolutely was. And you know what? It brought our team together an awful lot more, because the young guys felt like they could contribute, and the older guys realised, you know, that we actually have a group here that we can play the 11th and 12th men and still be happy that they can contribute. And it was a huge, huge win up there for us. We were missing 4 or 5 starters due to COVID or whatever happened. And I think that's kind of started us along the way, where we kind of felt, okay, we could be really special here, like Fergal said, when we get our group together. And it was huge. And they played in the cup as well, like they played in all cup games. So like, it's great going forward, and it is the strength of the Warriors is the filter system for both clubs. It really is, and hopefully we can continue next year to do the same. It looks like there'll be conferences again where you can, and I like the conferences for the very reason that you can play those guys, and it's not do or die every night when it comes to the league. So it looks like that's the way it's going to be set up. Obviously it'll be 14 teams next year, so it's going to be an extra month of basketball, but that's a good complaint to have.
You have the target on your back next year, of course. There'll be no easy points given up in any way venue. Fergal, I suppose everyone knows how good Tralee have been with its local talent coming through, you know, so many youngsters over the years. What's the secret to that success? I mean, it's something that a lot of clubs would be envious of, because you seem to bring up good quality youngsters up to a level, and obviously some of them have gone to the States, but you're able to replace them again kind of year on year, and they're all kind of, I suppose, nearly ready to step up to the Premier level as well. What's in the water around Tralee, Fergal?
It's just the numbers we're producing, really, more than anything. Going, like, you know, if you're bringing through 50 or 60 young kids at each age group every year, you're going to get one or two, like, and that's what it's all about, really. Giving all those kids kind of equal opportunity to play and enjoy, love the game. But you know, you're always going to get one or two from that. Like, just for example, St. Brendan's under 14s, they were above the All-Irelands last week, but St. Brendan's actually have, I think it's 5 under 14 teams or 4 under 14 teams, you know. And you'd be looking at the likes of them and the likes of Imperials, good under 16s and under 18s. You'd be looking for one or two of those kids to break through and add into a good bunch of kids we already have.
Mm-hmm. Of course, John, the other side of the kind of that, of course, is the recruitment. I suppose, you know, he certainly had some of the best kind of, I suppose, imports. It's a harsh enough word, I suppose, when you use, but you know what I mean. Aaron Clixey, how important was he to the whole thing this year?
Unbelievable. Like, his pedigree, I suppose, might not be seen. He played at Oklahoma, which is like a top 50 school in America, for those who don't know. They have, you know, his roommate is playing with with the New York Knicks at the moment in the NBA. So you're talking about that caliber of a guy. He went to Georgia for his first year pro career and it didn't work out. And then unfortunately COVID hit and he didn't get a job. So he was just hungry to come. And to be fair to him, when we made the offer to him, he took it straight away. It wasn't he was looking for anywhere better. He believed in what we were saying to him. He believed in what we were doing, and we were able to develop a relationship then with the coaching staff and the players over the summer, which I think really helped. But look, it started already for next year. It's a 12-month gig. Like you know, you might take a couple of days off, but already players are coming through for next year. And you know, Ireland being a lower level league, you have to filter out. And I suppose the big thing for me, Garrett and Jimmy, when we're recruiting, is we want to recruit the person. Because, okay, you can have an outstanding player, but like Fergal said there, if he doesn't want to go down and coach in the teams, which is, you know, a non-negotiable for us, and help out in Brendan's Academy and Imperial's Academy, then we're not going to take him no matter how good he is. And that's a fact. Like, we have given up fellas because they're like, I'm not into the coaching. That's really important for us because David Clifford is mentioned every week, and he should be, but like Aaron Galixi is our David Clifford, and he went down to the academy, Nico went down to the academy, and there's I guarantee you there's five or six kids in either academy that as a result of them will come through, and they will say, I remember when he used to come down, he used to dunk the ball and he used to do this, and that really set me alight for basketball. And that's, you know, that's part of the recruitment, recruiting the person, and that's very, very important. And I think, to be fair to the pros that we brought this year, they were as good as we've had for that, being in the community and giving up their free time and coaching, etc., etc. So, I mean, that's very important for the continuation of the club.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now, last October, we lost a huge contributor to sport in the county and here on Radio Kerry when we learned of the passing of Padraig Hartnett. Most known for his work with underage soccer, Padraig could be found anywhere covering a variety of sports. And in May, Padraig joined us in studio with Dahi Cregan to talk about the future of cycling in the county.
Yeah, I suppose you have a number of strong clubs in the underage, particularly Sleeve Lucro, doing an awful lot of work, and they had 15, 16 riders in the three-day Cantorque this weekend, and I think I just saw the results before I came in. And you had nine of them made the top 10 and three or four of them made the podium. So there's a lot of work going on in those. Killarney doing a lot of work, the senior side of it. Then you've Tralee Manor West and that, but probably really you need to develop the under 8 side of it more, and we hopefully can get back to the summer leagues, which have been off with COVID, and the summer time trials as well, which people need to compete as well. Training is fine, the boys will tell you, because they've been on the competitive side of it, like you need something to compete. And we're probably lucky in Kerry that we start off the season with the Lacey Cup, and then of course we have the Kerry Group Ross Moon, and then we'll talk later on with the Ross Talton stage. So there's an awful lot happening in cycling that maybe a lot of people out there don't know about.
Mm-hmm. I suppose the most recent event, of course, was that Kerry Group Ross Moon. Dahi, 4 days. I mean, you kind of put the jigsaw together like they're doing in the Giro. I mean, it's only 4 days, but you still have all the things. How did that go for you this year? Was it a success? Well, looking back on it now, because I suppose if I asked you last Monday evening, I suppose you'd be totally stressed about it. But looking back on a week or two in the cold light of day, how did it go for you?
Yeah, sure, Donald. Overall, it was a big success. You know, it was a different approach this year. We involved four host clubs, Tralee Manor West, Intralee, Killarney Cycling Club from Killarney, and then we had Sleeve Lucro in Knocknagree, and we had Newcastle West and Abbeyfield, which hosted the final stage. So it was a different approach. I suppose it spread the workload. But looking back on it, yeah, big success, you know. Mm-hmm.
And I suppose the nuts and bolts of it, Dahi, for people listening, I mean, it's competitive, it's teams. What type of level are the guys that are cycling it?
Yeah, I suppose it is an elite event, you know. So you had the want of 150 riders, you know, compared to probably county footballer level stuff. Like, you know, they're all training 15, 20 hours a week, every week, you know, putting a big winter of strength and conditioning. Do you know, it's similar from how would I say, looking back and what's required to take on something like Kerry Group Ross Moon, you know. So,
and of course it's a feeder event. No Ross Moon back in the day, Matt, but there was the Ross Talton.
Well, there was always the Ross Moon since the 50s.
Good stuff.
Yeah, there was always the Ross Moon, Ross Ulla, Ross Lyne, and then Ross Connacht, the four provinces, and then you had the Ross, Brilliant. To follow on. That's the way they worked it. You know, so it was always there, really.
What, I mean, Kerry, I suppose we go back into the history books, maybe back to the 50s. I mean, it was kind of a golden era of cycling in Kerry, lot of big names. You mentioned one man outside the door there to me now at the moment, Mr. Hearn, a fantastic cyclist. There was plenty around that time.
There was, yeah, some great riders. Cycling really took off in Kerry in the 50s. Before that, it was all track cycling. The likes of Eugene Moriarty's grandfather now. Gene Moriarty, he was a great track cyclist. And then Gene Mangan started cycling, true track cycling. And then road cycling came on then in the 50s. Then you had some very, very great success in Kerry.
Mm-hmm. And those early days, of course, I mean, I suppose everything moves forward. I mean, the bikes are different now. But what were the bikes like back in the 50s and the 60s? I mean, obviously, don't tell me they had two wheels and a power and a saddle. But obviously, they were harder to cycle. They were more difficult, were they?
Honestly, people say that, but honestly, no. They were still, like you had your Reynolds 531 tubing, which would be similar to your carbon today. No, honestly, no. They were still very good bikes, because guys, cyclists always like good bikes. Like the great Mick Murphy said to my older brother, lots of mercy in him. He said, "You boys in Tralee love the fancy bike, but it's about the body, and it's about the body." And he was right.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's about the body.
Yeah, Mike was certainly.
Mike was,
was a hard man, a neighbour, of course, only up the road and so green. Padraig, I mean, getting into it, you said there's clubs, there's going to be people here listening tonight. Obviously, the first contact is the club. A lot of people kind of fall in love with cycling in a sense, in a social sense. You know, it's something that you can put in the boot of the car and the whole lot. But some people then develop their way into kind of more active, and then obviously they kind of go more elite. Is there a big jump from social to elite?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's like any sport, you know, you can have the fun element of it. It's like just kicking a ball around the air, but then when you want to go on, you have to get in with a club, and the best place to go in is a club, and you have the club coaches who will teach you all the basics. You need to learn about the bikes, you need all that kind of stuff. So any young person that's out there, you know, that's where to start, your local club, and hopefully, you know, over the coming months, you'll get more and more of the clubs that'll start taking in more of the underage people, because that's probably one of the areas where cycling does need to develop. And I know it's very hard for clubs to run events because you're running them on the roads and that. So, yeah, but you see in Greenmount over the border in Limerick, they run it in the Limerick racecourse. So if you could get something going, and I know Killarney used the Killarney racecourse at one stage, if you could get something like that going around the county and get the underage racing in a league during the summer, that's where it would really grow, because there is a great appetite for it. And once they get involved in it, it's like everything. And once they start progressing and competing against riders from outside the county, and then you go to the elite level, you have the likes of Tom Moyarty now, of course, who's abroad, who's riding pro as well. So I mean, the progression is there for to start at the very start and to go all the way to the top if that's what you want to do, but it takes an awful lot of hard work.
Mm-hmm. Di, I suppose just going back to the big event of the 4 days, going forward, what's going to happen? Are you going to kind of push it out? Is it an area that you're happy to stay in where you delve it out to the four clubs, or have you bigger plans ahead?
Yeah, I suppose, look, the lofty goal initially now is to we had a 2-year gap. So we're back on track now this year, and definitely the lofty goal is to run it again next year, maintain our title sponsor, and definitely grow the event, like, you know. But ultimately, we'll say the tools now are in place. It'll be still the same calendar dates, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's the plan. Just to retain what we have and maintain it. I suppose.
Yeah, it seems sensible. Title sponsor, you mentioned Kerry Group, fantastic sponsor.
Yeah, for sure. And without them, I suppose this year's event was definitely questionable around last December when we first met. We didn't have a sponsor, and we didn't know what direction the race would take or go. Like, you know, there was talks of going to Nina, then that fell through, and then we met probably December time, I suppose, and came up with this footprint, we'll say. So, yeah, look, as I say, it's back on track now, and the short long-term goal for now is definitely retain it again for next year. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Matt, looking back, we will ask you a question in the colourful days as well, Matt, but we'll just look back one more moment. back not so far ago, the Nissan Classic, it was a huge favourite when it arrived. Kelly and Roach were at their best.
Yes.
This county obviously really enjoyed it. I remember being in school and being parked outside the gate and watching them fly through, and then rushing home probably the evening to find out that Simon Yates made it all the way up the top of the hill and down the other side, and Sean Kelly won. Those were great days. Why do we kind of fall off the cliff a small bit?
I suppose your first two words there kind of summed it up. Kelly Roach.
Yes.
That's about the size of it. Imagine. If we had another Kelly Roach, number one and two in the world, you could be very easily get a sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's what you need. Like, we're very lucky now. We have Sam Bennett, who won a big race yesterday in Frankfurt, which was great to see, because he'd worked so hard to win that. And that was a five-hour race. It wasn't a walk in the park, like, and the average speed was around 45k an hour, you know, for the 5 hours constant. And, you know, that's what they do. And now you've Eddie Dunbar, hopefully will come through and win, which I think he will, because he has the potential to do that. Again, you need some big sponsor to step in and say, look, I'd like a race, and get somebody behind it, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm. And of course, it is a sport, I suppose, we often forget about. Somebody gets an Irish flag around and we think, obviously, it's success. But, I mean, you're competing in a fair sport. There's Germans and Austrians and Dutch and the whole lot. I mean, there's the world. And, of course, there's an awful lot of countries now that wouldn't have been traditional countries as well, getting cyclists up to that level. So it is very, very hard to get to Grand Tour stage.
Oh, well, that would be even the calendar year itself. You'd hardly have... It could hardly fit you in now to want to be mm-hmm. 4 or 5 years' time before yes. they'd give you a date. So you want a sponsor on board now for something in 4 or 5 years' time. So it is difficult. But look, once we have guys winning on the continent, we're very happy with yeah. that.
Padraig, it's guess that Matt says that something like that would have to take 4 or 5 years' planning. I suppose at times people talk about planning and they kind of put it to the side. We know it'll happen tomorrow and sure we'll get a committee and off we go. The planning process is very slow to get something very stable.
Well, I suppose if you look at what Doughty and his committee did this year, it looked like after Kilarglan, who had ran as the Ross Moon for the Kerry Group Ross Moon for what, 19 years, that when the COVID break came, Kerry could have lost it. And without the boys stepping in, and they're slow to praise themselves, but the amount that goes into that, the amount of the safety plan, you had the Rally of the Lakes that Ivan, your producer, knows all about over the weekend, but they were on closed roads. Remember, the Kerry Group Ross Moon is on open roads, so you need a huge amount of volunteers, you need a huge amount of marshals, you need motor marshals, you need medical control. Every team has a team car, so you have a cavalcade of probably 30 cars following it. You have over almost 200 riders on the road, on open roads, so it's a huge, huge event. So, I mean, they deserve huge credit what they did to bring it back to Kerry, and with the help of Kerry Group. So hopefully we won't lose it again, because if you lose something like that, the chance of getting it back are very slim, and to have a 4 day in Kerry is huge. So we need to keep it, and you know, they deserve huge praise for the work they did this year.
Mm-hmm. The racing itself, of course, people look at it and we were saying that they were exceptionally elite. You've been watching it for a long time. What was the standard like this year in it?
Oh, very strong, and you had some junior riders as well, including some of our own, Sam Balder to Killarney, where riding with the Cycling Ireland team, and some of the juniors won it as well. So there's a lot of talent coming through as well, you know. So it was very, very competitive, and everybody that won a stage, you know, when they came off the bikes, they really had knew they were in a stage, and of course the roads and the route suited as well. They're very, very hard, the climbs and everything. So it was very competitive, and great sprints for the finishes. And like I said, every rider that won that stage and wore that jersey, they certainly deserved it over the 4 days.
Breaking down the weekend sporting action. This is Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Now, welcome back to the second hour and final hour of this evening's Terrace Talk special, reviewing the year that was 2022. Now, please note that this programme is pre-recorded, so please don't call or text in, or we'll all get in trouble. Now, well, back in August, we spoke to Kerry's sole representative on the Munster rugby team, and as the squad ramped up its preparations for the upcoming season, Jack Daly was forced into a spell on the sidelines with an injury. We found out what it was like inside the rehab room in Munster, and we looked into Jack's injury.
Now, the Munster squad will travel to Cardiff Arms Park on Saturday night now to take on Cardiff in the opening round of the URC. It marks, I suppose, the end of the pre-season for Munster and back to competitive action once again. However, one man who remains on the injured list for a little while longer anyway is Castle Island's Jack Daly, and I'm delighted to have him on the line now for a little chat about rugby, I suppose the year ahead, and what is a very important season for him and the Munster side with a new man in charge and the whole lot. Jack, thanks first of all for taking the time out tonight here on Terrace Talk. We really appreciate it.
Jack, is it strange to see the boys back in action and maybe you're just not there yet?
Yeah, definitely. I think I've been quite fortunate with injury previously that I haven't had to sit out a massive amount of time, but this time, yeah, it is frustrating rather than strange, I suppose, to be watching everyone out going out to train and you're fortunately not in that position, I guess, yeah.
And you're watching them. The injury itself, I suppose, look, I know the injury itself, but for the listeners tonight, what's the nature of it and I suppose maybe the length of time that's deemed with the injury that you have?
Yeah, so I've done, well, there isn't a lot I haven't done to my knee, actually, unfortunately. So I've done my ACL, which is in the centre of your knee, MCL, which is on the inside, and I've done my meniscus on the outside as well. So it was just particularly nasty, and it actually required two surgeries. So I had one in mid-June, and I had the other one just a little over 3 weeks ago now. So, in terms of return to play, it's kind of hard to say as of the moment. I'm hoping for in the region of 6 months from now, but obviously quite individual and kind of down to a bit of luck, really, as well.
My God, absolutely. You know your way around the operating table. I knew how about on the rugby field at the moment.
Unfortunately, yeah.
How do you respond to that? I mean, you get the news, and I suppose equate it to a GA person. You get the news and you're injured for, I don't know, 2 weeks, or you have a bad shoulder injury, and you're put back in the current jersey and put back out to play or whatever. But, I mean, when somebody sits down and say, you know, the length of this journey is going to be 6 to 8 months, provided that you tick all the various boxes. What's the mindset there, Jack?
It's a good question. It's definitely a lot of shock at the start. Anyway, it's I was very emotional about it. I think I kind of knew when it happened that it wasn't good. I mean, if you see anyone getting carted off the field on the bogey or whatever it is, you know you're not in good shape. But
And obviously it's a lonely becoming, you know, like you're in a team setting. I mean, I suppose at that moment everybody is concentrating on the game as such, and you're carted off on the buggy and off down the tunnel and the whole lot, and I suppose in a day or two you find out, God, this is going to take 4 months or 6 months or whatever it is. It's a lonely journey, I'd imagine. I mean, Andrew and RG, they're also on the injured list. Do you have some kind of camaraderie between them, that you chat and talk to them and about injuries, or everybody very individual?
No, I wouldn't say, well, everyone has their individual injuries, and that obviously leads into your own individual return from injury, but no, I'd be close to both of them. Probably Orgy more so, given that we've had pretty much identical injuries, unfortunately, so he can empathise a lot, obviously, with my situation, and I've asked him a lot for advice, just how to go about it, really, like, and how his mindset has been. Obviously, you know, he's been through it twice now, so you know, he knows how it goes. But no, we definitely support each other. It's not an easy process. Like, everyone obviously wants to be playing rugby, no one wants to be on a physio table for any length of time, but yeah, unfortunately, that's the reality of the sport. So
it's the side of sport as well. People don't see on the television, so I suppose you go off the TV and people kind of say, "Are he's injured? He's over there." But we never kind of really empathise with the player that's actually injured. We'll say, "Oh, sure, he'll be back next week, or he'll be back in 4 weeks' time." But we don't know the journey that the player is going through. Jax, we'll go off all the negative stuff. That's kind of, my God, I mean, just depressing myself with injuries. We'll talk about something that wasn't negative. You made your European debut for Munster, of course, last year, I suppose, in the Champions Cup quarterfinal defeat to the French champions to lose, I suppose, in one of those kind of strangest of all kind of strange games. But just before you went on, I mean, you went on for Peter Mahoney, I suppose, what were the butterflies like, or did you know prior to that so-and-so, if this happens, you're on, or are you just sitting on the bench like an under 11 hoping that, please God, I might get a few minutes? What's it like? Well, take me through that process.
Yeah, it was. Geez, it was the most nerve-wracking experience of my life. But equally, it was very, very positive. It was incredible to make my debut. But in terms of the process, in terms of coming on and stuff, there, I wasn't really told during the week. I was told to cover two positions. So blind side and open side, which would have meant I would have likely had game time at some point. But as to where that is, it's kind of hard to say, and it's kind of hard for the coach in his situation to give you any promises, especially in a game like that.
Mm-hmm.
Quarter final, you know, anything could happen, and literally anything did in that game, I guess. So
yeah, it was all over.
Yeah, it was all over the place.
Yeah, the pace of the game. I mean, we're watching on television. We see the hits, and that they're up front. And now I know you went through Castlelyle, and you probably played Tralee a few times, or maybe Clarny and Westmunster and the whole lot. And it obviously goes all the way up along. What was the pace like of the game, particularly in your debut? You went out. Can you remember your first tackle? Can you remember your first hit, or did you miss a tackle? Maybe I don't know. But can you remember your first play?
Yeah, I can remember it quite clearly. It's definitely a step up again. I think some of it might be in your own head, but there's definitely, like, it definitely means more as competition. I think it's like going into championship in GA, really. It's the exact same. Like, it means more. So people do more, and are, you know, they're better players at that standard as well. So yeah, the pace is insanely quick. I mean, a lot of those guys are playing international level for France and stuff. So getting exposure to that was obviously very beneficial for me, but definitely an eye opener in terms of the speed of decision making and how people operate at that level.
Mm-hmm, absolutely, it's great to watch it. The game, of course, look, it, like I said, it was all over the place. It was dramatic, and of course, it ended in a draw. I suppose, really, then the dreaded penalties, and that's something that people, I suppose, we're more accustomed to soccer and penalties, and I suppose we're getting more accustomed to kind of the JA side of the world, where a game ends and you have to play penalties and fellas will be for it and against it. But what's the feeling like with players on a rugby pitch, particularly their penalties and they're kicked from different distances and the whole lot? I mean, what's that like when you're watching, it's only the two kickers were doing it, weren't it? So you're watching two fellas and you're saying, please God, go over the bar or whatever it is. Is that terribly hard on the kicker, or is this what they train for and this is their job?
I'd imagine it is quite hard on the kicker. I mean, I don't think anyone really prepares for that situation. I mean, like, it only happened twice in the history of Heineken Cup, like. Mm-hmm. So I don't think anyone envisioned that it would happen, but it's very tough on the kickers. I think a lot of us didn't really, like, no one knew the procedure in terms of the rules if it went to such a situation. Like, we didn't know how many kickers there would be, or like where the kickers would start from, or like if everyone in the 15 would have to take a kick, which might have been interesting to watch. But yeah.
Would you have stepped up? Well, obviously
absolutely not.
Would you not? No. Have you ever kicked a penalty?
Have I ever kicked? That's good. I don't think I have. No, I don't think so.
Oh my God!
No, I never.
All the way through, you left some back at it, or forward. Come here. I mean, the game was last 4-2. Of course, I mean, I suppose at the end of the day, it's your debut. I mean, that's a high. It ends in a draw. That's kind of a high as well, I'd imagine. It's to lose. It's big. Then you lose out in penalties with little enough control, I suppose, over it. What was the feeling at the camp kind of initially after? I would imagine disappointment, but do professional athletes take it a little bit different, or are you still kind of disappointed like the rest of us, or do you kind of compartmentalise all this and say, well, look, this is the way it was. If we'd done this and this, it would be a different result? Or are you just like this, the rest of us, you just go off the field and you say, God, that was whatever?
I'd say we're very much like anyone else. We're all human when it comes to these things. You know, you don't go out onto the pitch and go out there to lose. You know what I mean? You go out there to try and win the game. So to not have an emotional reaction and be, you know, devastated losing in that fashion was very, very hard for a lot of people to take.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for people who've been, you know, they've been at this competition for a while. You know, they desperately want to win and deserve to win these competitions, and it just hasn't happened. So you know, it's a competition we really want to win, so it needs to be looked at as such, I suppose, really.
Yeah.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Back to the best of Terrace Talk 2022. Now, earlier in October, we learned the news that Paul Nagle was to retire from full-time World Rally Championship career at the end of the current season. Now, Paul took time out of his busy schedule to travel to Tralee and speak to us on the highs and some lows of his career, as well as why it was the right time to hang up the helmet.
Now, after 18 years in top flight rallying, 44-year-old Paul Nagle. My God, 44. Paul, you're looking good for 44. There he is, sitting there with me. He's chosen to retire from the sport. He revealed, of course, that he will retire in the World Rally Championships after Rally Catalunya at the end of the month. I'm delighted to say that we have Paul now in studio with us to chat about that and maybe a little bit more about the announcement and where the journey is going to take him next, possibly. Paul, I'm sure you're getting used to the word retirement now. It's been bandied about. Most people that retire, you think you're retiring really old and you're heading off into the sunset. Retiring from a professional sport, though, it does come a time where the time is right. Is this the right time?
It feels like it's the right time, and yeah, don't. It's been half my life, really, in the motorsport world. In the World Championship, it's the top level of the sport, and I've been there for the last 10-15 years at that level, and it takes a toll, the amount of rallies, the amount of travelling. As I said, I'm 44 now. I started off when I was a young lad, and I hadn't a care in the world and was just off around the world with a suitcase around me. But as you get older, times change and you have wives and kids.
When you jumped into the rally first, I mean, you're a young fella, you pack your suitcase. Some guy says, listen, you're going to anywhere in the world. You want to go to Sweden or Portugal or wherever it was at the time, the first one. Can you remember the first one?
Well, it all started back in my local rally, in the Clan Historic Rally, back in 1996. That's where it really started. But that was at a low level in Irish motorsport, and built myself up in Irish scenes for 10 years probably, and then got a break in the World Championship. My first WRC rally was in 2004 in Spain, obviously, with my neighbour Donny O'Sullivan, and that's my first taste of the World Championship rallies. And from then on, it took off from there, really.
And what was it like rocking in two Clarny kids new on the block at that level? I mean, were you allowed in? Did you park in the right place? Were you following the fellas around the place saying, wow, he's a great fellow, will I get his autograph? Or do you fall in fairly quickly?
You fall in fairly quickly. Like, you have to get on with the sport, and back then we were very green going into Spain that year, but we had plenty of support. We were driving a Ford as well, so we had support from the Ford team. But it was a massive learning curve, and it was a learning curve with no pressure for me. We went out to enjoy ourselves and did a couple of rallies, and from there on, 2006, I went in with the McHale family and in the World Championship, and that's where I really put my name into the World Championship. I was getting a lot of experience up, and it's like any sport, if you get the experience up and you start getting results, you start getting recognised, and it took off. 8 and 9 was a bit of a quiet year, and got into the IRC, and was the European Rally Championship of today, with Chris Meek, a fellow from Tyrone, and we went on to win that championship, and from then on it was non-stop
It was country Spain after country, month after month, and just going through, because I was looking today, I mean, Monte Carlo, Sweden, Croatia, Portugal, Sardinia, Kenya, Estonia, Finland, Belgium, Greece, New Zealand, Spain. If you had the old suitcase, you'd have plenty of stamps on it.
I would, and if you had there, I was Argentina, Brazil, Mexico, Barbados. I've been all over the world. I'm very fortunate for that, and very grateful to see all those parts of the world. And it's all part and parcel. But you're on 100 flights a year. You're away from home over 200 odd days a year times, and you have probably 28 to 30 weekends away as well, between you leave the weekend before sometimes and everything, and you have long hauls, as you mentioned, some of the places there. So it is a flat out full time job, and you need massive support, and you have to give up your whole life for it. There is no distractions, and you have to just put your head down and skip everything and ignore weddings, funerals, parties, nights out with the boys. You have to give this your all, and
that social life as such is on hold. I mean, you mentioned this, we think it's a sport, but you mentioned the word job. It is a job. I mean, ultimately, some of us go to the work in the morning, they plug in the computer, but your job is to go and do the best you can for your, I suppose, for Ford and Citroen and whoever you were representing at various different times. Does these jobs, like every job after a while, just becomes a job?
It becomes a job when you get into the manufacturer teams and you're representing a brand like Citroen or Ford or Hyundai. When I was the last 10 years, it is a job. There's nothing else. You're there to perform. You're there to get results. There's 50, 60, 70 people at every event. working on behalf of myself and Craig and myself and Chris down through the years, and they expect the best, and we're there. There's 9 or 10 professional seats in the world, and we have one of them, and that brings all the pressure and the expectations and the stress and all that. So it's gone from a sport. It's a job. It's a full time job, and it can be a difficult job at times. And the sport has changed over the last 10 years now. Most of the rallies now are live on TV, and you've all social media now compared to 7 or 8 years ago. So you've all that aspect as well, which is very important, because that's what brands want and that's what manufacturers want and everything. But you also have the negative side as well, where you've all the critics and political.
The negative side, of course, you see a lot with professional sport. I mean, you don't deliver, you come third instead of second, you come fifth. The negative side, does that have an impact? Do you follow it? Do you watch it? Even if you're not watching it, maybe your family are watching it, or your neighbours down the road are certainly looking at it. Does that have an impact?
It does, but you learn to deal with it. Back maybe in 2017 and 18, we were having a really bad time in the Citroen days, and it did affect us a bit. Like, there's social media can be a dangerous place, and it got to us at times. But now, this day and age, you just sort of over your shoulders and just smile and nod.
You become used to it. You know, you're not Stephen Kenny. Like, I mean, after every FAI match, you know, Stephen Kenny is in, out, or you know, it follows it. Talk to us about somebody else, more important people in your life, probably your own family. I mean, I know you have two small kids. What age are they? They're smallies, aren't they?
One is, first fella's 5, and Leon is 2.5. He'll be 3 Christmas. So it's a busy household now as well. We need 2 kids at home. Yeah. And my wife, Caddy, has been supportive all the last 10, 15 years as well. And her life is put on hold as well, because she's at home minding kids and everything. So, as I said, it's a team effort from home as well. But when you're away so much, she has to just run the house, run everything.
So when you get home, are you put on dishwasher duty and washing machines, or are you still kind of half working?
When I get home, I put hands on deck as well and try and help out as much as I can. Does
Katie give you the shopping list and say, go off there now, I haven't seen you in 36 weeks or something?
No, she goes off and does that and leaves me home with the kids to manage the kids and everything. But notice
what's that kids' time like? I mean, I have a small fellow, he's not small anymore, but I can remember when they were that small and they're moving up. It's like the world is all theirs in sense. I mean, you move everything around their world. What's it like to get home, getting out of the car, away from the stress, away from the social media, and there's Fitz and Leon probably knocking something over inside the house, or the next emergency, and that's up. What's it like that time?
It's great when you get home, see them. It doesn't matter what they're doing, you know, you're away so much, and it's when they're at an age now where they know I'm gone, and they know I'm going away, which is a bit more difficult. Last couple of years, when they were a lot younger, I was just gone, but now they know when you're leaving on a Sunday morning or Monday going to a race that there's tears in the eyes, and that can be difficult when you come home to see them. But we're lucky enough now we FaceTime, and you have all those gadgets that can keep us connected around the world. But yeah, like the young lads now, he's starting playing football and he's doing all these bits and pieces, and there's a stage in my life I have to give back. I've been very fortunate to what I've done, and I have to do something back to my own family and friends and my own mother as well, and as well at home, that I've been away so much. So it's time I give something back to them that they've given me so much over the last 15 years.
I presume when you made this decision, obviously you speak to Craig and he knows first. Was that a difficult decision? Was it an easy chat? Do you have a great relationship? Is it kind of one where you could bounce it off, or did you have to kind of wait for a certain time to do it, or was it a surprise, or how did it happen?
No, myself and Craig have a great relationship inside and outside the car. We always had. We've known each other for a long, long time, and Craig knew that I was coming to end of my career at some stage. He's 12 years younger than me, so it came after June. I was second in Sardinia in Italy in June, and I decided then maybe it was time to have a chat and discuss moving forward and getting someone. And it's a big decision to make, and it's a big, because there's a lot of confidence you need inside the car, and teamwork and getting on with someone. And it just went down from there for the next couple of months. We decided that, yeah, it was time to go, and when it was the right time to go. And we got someone else in, go do a bit of testing and see how they would get on with Craig. And it was the plan, the end of the year, Japan, the last round, and then the first round, this Monte Carlo in January. So it was either stop after Spain or try and do Monte Carlo as well, because sending a new co-driver to the first round of the championship is quite daunting when you're over on the streets of Monaco and heading up into the mountains of snow and ice. So I've opted out after Spain, and I'll go and help Craig in Japan, and I will help him as much as possible next year as well as part of the team, but not as a co-driver.
Mm-hmm. Of course, your role is a co-driver. I mean, speak to us about that, I suppose. I mean, obviously you're the guy that's sitting in and roaring out, go left, go right, crest this or whatever it is, or shouting whatever way it is. Talk to us about some of the times where things might go wrong and maybe it's the wrong note, or maybe he's not driving the car the right way. It's a fierce trusting relationship to get that car from A to B as fast as you can, and things do go wrong. But how do you deal with issues that, obviously, you know, I won't say a mistake has been made, but, you know, obviously in every sport, you know, there's a call that goes right or goes wrong. I presume you've had a couple of those over that long lasting relationship.
Oh, there is, of course, like, and it's no secret at the moment we're having a bad season, where more or less like last three or four rounds have been pretty difficult, and it has its ups and downs, like, and we've had mistakes, we've made mistakes, and the pressure's on at the moment, but we have to work together, you stick together, and like, Craig's one of the most consistent drivers in the World Championship last year, and we've gone through maybe a run of three or four races here where we have mistakes in retirement, and we just have to deal with it, work through it. It's like a footballer kicking wides, or a soccer player not performing up front, and it's all based in confidence as well, and it'll all come back for Craig, and we'll work in every way possible to get him back on the podiums again for next year.
So a man who's going to fill us in a little bit more about Paul, because he's very kind of, he doesn't give much away, does he? So we've got Sean Moriarty to dish all the secrets out.
I might give all the secrets out.
Okay, well, we only want one, you know, we only want one good one. We might get it in. Sean, I suppose put into a minute or two what this guy has actually achieved. I mean, we were looking at the day and we were saying, look, it's a world sport, ching. He's one of the top 10 in the world, ching. He travels around more places than Man United are going, unless they're in the UEFA. Well, they don't play Kenya yet, and they haven't gone that bad yet. So he's done all this. He spent 22 years of his life, he told me, or at least half his life. He didn't say 22, of course. He was very clever there, doing it. So what has this man achieved? And is he one of Kerry's greatest?
I would safely say he's one of Ireland's greatest motorsport representatives. You're looking at 5 World Championship, 5 FIA wins, 18 podiums at that level, 2 Intercontinental titles. These are the best championships in the world. He mentioned in the early part of the interview that there is 9 or 10 professional seats. He's held one of them consistently for the last 18 years. There's very few other sportsmen in any discipline across the county that can put those records together and put them together into one package. There's even one very unusual record. It stems back to Finland in 2018, when himself and Chris Meek won the Finnish rally, and it's very unusual for a non-Scandinavian to win that rally, and they were the fastest ever world rally car on a special stage ever, and that has not been repeated in that length of time. Officially the fastest two men in the world in a rally car, and that record is unlikely to change in the near future with the current hybrid technology.
Well, he certainly built you up, hasn't he?
He knows better more than I do.
But we should have just interviewed you, really, Sean, I suppose. Paul, when you hear it all back, I mean, people say that your career goes by in the blink of an eye. I mean, you were talking about, you know, how yourself and your buddy just rocked over and you were a little bit green. Where do you turn from being green to being ultra competitive to being one of the top 10? Do you know that's happening yourself, or do you take a look back and you have fellas like Sean Moriarty reminding you how good you've got?
I suppose I'm inside in the bubble with the last so many years, whatever, and it's probably when I stop now and retire and look back what I've done and what I've achieved, and I've been very fortunate to represent the country at the highest level of the sport and to win the rallies and have all the podiums. Yeah, you probably pinch yourself a few times and go, I didn't do so bad. And pinch even when I came back home,
pinch yourself there and give me your top 3. I mean, he gave me 18, this and 18.
No, like, when you win your first World Championship rally in Argentina in 2015, that's a very special moment. And obviously Sean, he missed winning Finland, and when he win Finland, it's like winning the Champions League final. It's
go back to Argentina. You won Argentina. Did you appear in the local newspaper here? Or was it just kind of a small?
Probably did, like, but look, Sean would be a good man for that, like, put it in the papers. But look, I wasn't in for the fame for being in the papers or anything like that. I did it for love of the sport, and that's where I started out as a carryman, chasing probably the Irish dreams and winning the Irish rallies and winning my rallies, lakes and the home rallies. And it just one thing led to another, and I was determined and I wanted to get to the top, and whatever means matters, I went there and did the best and took gambles and took risks and made the right decisions at the right times, which is very important, and believed in myself that I could chase the dream and live the dream.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Welcome back. Well, 2022 was a historic year in Kerry sporting circles for multiple reasons, but it was the year that we found out that SSE Airtricity League of Ireland Senior Football was to come to the county for the first time with the formation of Kerry FC. Brainchild and Kerry soccer star Billy Dinahy, the club's general manager Sean O'Keefe, along with club's operations man Stephen Conway, spoke to Terrace Talk on the news of the big day.
I'm delighted to have in the studio Sean O'Keefe, and I'll talk to Billy on the line shortly, and Stephen is joining us as well from over there in Boston. Good evening to all of you. First of all, Sean, it's a magnificent achievement, and I suppose on behalf of everybody in Kerry, massive congratulations, because that's what it is. I mean, it's a good news story. It was an idea, you developed the idea, and now it's a reality, and now the hard work starts again. How excited were you when you found out, Sean, and what does it mean to you, and I suppose all the people that you've been working with? I remember when you were in, you were saying that you had a small, very committed bunch of people, and you got the project over the line. On a personal level, what does it mean for you and for all those involved?
Thank you, Donal, and it's great to be on the show tonight. You know, on a personal level, I've been involved in soccer, I suppose, nearly 30 years, and as you quite correctly say, it was a dream, and now the dream is a reality. How were we feeling? We were waiting on Tuesday night. We had all the board together and waiting, trying to get news and texting the FAI, and you know, we were on tenterhooks. And then on Wednesday morning, the email came through that our licensing application had been approved. So we were just ecstatic, you know, just ecstatic, and delighted and privileged to be able to bring this to Kerry, for our clubs in Kerry, for our players in Kerry, for the people that established the Kerry District League back in 1972, you know, our founding fathers. And we remember them. We remember all the people, the volunteers in Kerry that have built clubs, that have, you know, gone out and fundraised and kept our game so vibrant. And it's for them. It's for them that we're doing that, and for the young people, for the players, so that everybody can come up to Mount Hawk Park on a Friday night and see a very high quality standard of football, and that our players have a pathway. They can now go 14s, 15s, 17s, 19s and senior, you know. Mm-hmm. So we're absolutely delighted.
Mm-hmm. Speak to us about the media briefing, because I suppose it became official then when everybody saw it, and I mean, people were tweeting and people were wishing people the best of luck, and I saw, you know, very big clubs retweeting and wishing you the very best of luck. I suppose the soccer world, it's like every sporting, no matter how big it is, it's still a small world, but you're part of that family now on equal footing with the Shamrock Rovers and the Derry Cities and the Finn Harps. I mean, that must be a strange feeling, especially, I suppose, like you started with 1972, the district. I mean, we all played soccer. You know, talking out of the boot of cars at the side of the road, the ref might turn up, the ref didn't turn up, we might have refed ourselves, we didn't have enough to play. That's where this has come. But now we're at a level where we are competing, or we get a chance to compete, and we get a chance to showcase probably the best of our talents. I mean, that's massive.
Yeah, it's great for us, and it's great for the Kerry people. We've had a taste of it with our under-17s and under-19s, and this year we had the under-14s. So we've been building over the last 6 years. We've been involved with the League of Ireland. They invited us back in at underage level 6 years ago. We had been here in the year 2000 to the 2005 when we were in the Aircom Under 21 League, and we had some great days up in Mount Hawk Park against Waterford United, against Cork City, you know. So we're used to the League of Ireland. Obviously, this is a higher standard. This is very professional. We've been contacted by the League of Ireland today. Lots of seminars, lots of conferences to go to, you know. So we have a lot to learn as well.
Mm-hmm. Billy Dinahy, of course, a man who's learning a lot on his feet at the moment, I'd imagine, Director of Football, Kerry FC. Billy, first of all, congratulations. I know a lot of people who worked really hard, but I can say it from knowing you that you've worked exceptionally hard to kind of bring this project all the way to the line as well. Billy, on a personal level for you, what does it feel?
Yeah, how are you doing? And again, thanks for inviting us back on. I suppose, yeah, since we were on a couple of weeks ago, there was, you know, we were kind of the pitch really that have to put the foundations in place for the players on the pitch, you know, to develop and to grow and to perform. And, you know, that's what Kerry FC will do now, provide this pathway for all the, you know, boys and girls of the future, really.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you're right there, Billy. I suppose before we talk about players and games and fixtures and the whole lot, you really have to have the structure of the house has to be really, really solid. of all the work that you've done, I suppose, tiptoeing all the way through, ticking off every list, I suppose, from the FAI license, do you feel now that we're in a very, very strong position to not only have a very good product, but have a very successful product into the future?
Yeah, done. That's the plan. You know, that's the objective. Obviously, in sport, timelines change because it's an industry based on emotion. So, you know, when you're winning, everything is great, and when you're losing, everything's the end of the world. So, you know, just finding that balance too within the project and having the long term view of what we're looking to achieve here. Obviously, you know, we're going with an amateur model, you know, which is trying to make the club self-sustainable as quickly as possible. Mm. You know, and that will in itself create its own challenges because, you know, we're obviously going to be competing against fully professional teams and professional clubs, and you know, those environments are a bit down the road for us yet. But, you know, for sure, now the platform is there for the players to go and show that they can compete at this level. And, you know, hopefully further beyond that as well, into the possibly Irish senior team down the road or the Premier League in England. And, you know, there are things I want the young people of Kerry dream and they can achieve now, because for far too long it was unachievable. You know, you were never really told you could dream for those things when you were from Kerry. And, you know, now everybody will be told it's there for you. And you know, go and maximise the opportunities that are there.
Mm-hmm. Another man who will have to maximise all the opportunities. Big title by him, the Chief Operations Officer, Stephen Conway. That's a huge title, isn't it?
It is, Donald. Thanks for having me on there. Yeah, I mean, basically, I'm kind of part of the cog in the background with you know, working with Sean, Billy, you know, Brian over here, and the staff we have there, you know, Geraldine as well, Geraldine Nagel. But we do believe that, you know, we have the right people there. We all share the same ethos and we all are aligned with what we're trying to do for Kerry soccer, for all young boys and girls. And I think once we said on the statement that, you know, it was a dream of kind of mine there maybe 20 years ago. And now, you know, that has passed for me as a player, obviously. And we're just so happy to have that platform there now for every young boy and girl in the county, because we will be having also girls teams competing, you know, in the years to come in the League of Ireland too.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Stephen, how important is it with the amount of talent that we have there in Kerry at the moment that now is the right time that we have a League of Ireland team, particularly as Sean said, we got a taste of it with under 14s and 15s and 17s. I presume if we didn't have it now, you'd be losing kind of a generation of players that come to 19 and kind of disappear into things. So now was a very important time to get that licence.
It was, and I think I can go back to, you know, when the first under 21 started 20 years ago. You know, I think the people in Kerry quickly realised that, you know, the teams that were there, that was a generation of group that came through, because those boys got the National Cup finals with their clubs. And, you know, the only really point in time where you'd be able to get seen by other clubs, you know, from across the water or in the League of Ireland was if you got to those national finals. So now, you know, we have this new generation of kids coming through, and we feel like it's the right time. And it's great that now that the kids don't have to venture outside of Kerry, which is kind of what most of us had to do to play at a higher level of football. And now it's there in their back garden, and you know, there's a wonderful facility right there that, you know, we're going to continue to upgrade. We've got wonderful coaching staff, we got great people behind it, and we truly believe that the players are there. And you know, once people, the young kids come and see the games on the Friday nights and the under teams on the Sundays, then that's going to inspire future generations, not just now, but in the future, because this is a long-term project, and this isn't a flash in the pan. And we are very, very aware of the challenges we face, but we are creating something that is there long-term for everybody in Kerry.
Mm-hmm. Sean, of course, you being from SD, you well know about what headwinds are like, and you've faced into many headwinds over the years. What's the next phase of this project? Where do we go from now? Obviously, the fixtures will come in February. A lot of people out there talking about teams and players and managers and all. I presume that's the next piece of the jigsaw, that's what you're working on currently.
Yeah, of course, Donald, we are. We're busy on all those fronts. We have an upgrade to do, as the lads said there, on Montauk Park. So we're very busy doing that, working. We have our lights up to spec. We have our pitch up to spec. We have to put a fence around the ground. We have to do some more work on safety, just to make sure that everybody can come in, have a good experience, you know, enjoy the night. We're working on that. We're working on the marketing side of it, season tickets. We'll be launching them very shortly, so that's a huge part of it for us. Our merchandise, our branding, and our clothing, our gear, we're working on having that. on sale very shortly as well, before Christmas and for the Christmas market.
Because it is a Christmas seller. I mean, people that mightn't like soccer at all are going to buy a Kerry FC, particularly the very first one. I mean, you're in a historic time. It's not like Man United are changing them three times a year. This is the first one. This is the big sell as well. And I mean, people, you know, I mean, it's a brilliant present. I mean, I don't know, green and white, green and gold, or is that all to be revealed? Maybe reveal it not here, because we might never again get you back. But very soon now,
in a couple of weeks' time, we'll have the big reveal. So, like all launches, we'll have a big hype coming up to it, and everybody will be able to see the first jersey. And I suppose one of the big aspects we're also working on is sponsors. So we're busy putting together our packages, just finalising them. And, you know, we'll have all the sponsors discussions and lined up and ready to go and on the gear and stuff like that. So that's another big part of the project.
Billy, director of football, are you going to get massively busy now, or are you busy already, or have you got a couple of headaches coming down the track? Obviously, panels, players, the whole lot, that kind of talk is out there, who's in, who's not there. It's not an issue for tonight in a sense, but I presume that's a process that's being stepped up on at the moment.
Yeah, Donald, I think, you know, from the outside it might seem like, you know, everything is very busy at the moment, but to be honest, I suppose from our point of view now, everybody who's kind of been working on this project now is probably hasn't been the busiest time. You know, the busiest times have kind of been over the last couple of months and years, really. And I suppose on the playing side, you know, we're probably way ahead of schedule in relation to the underage structures. So historically there, as Sean mentioned, there was a 17s, 19s and 14s added, but usually those players aren't back training until, you know, early to mid-January, with the season kicking off in February. Whereas now those players are back training already. You know, so we have all the underage structures in place. Obviously, Damien Lack was brought in as head of the academy, and the coaches are all in place with the underage team. So really all the underage structures are all in place and operating, and in terms of the senior team. So it's been a great, you know, outreach of players that have played for, you know, Kerry locally and have gone on and played League of Ireland now, looking to come back in, and other players from the wider region looking to come in and be involved as well. So to be honest, that's been, you know, fantastic to see from my point of view, the amount of people who are, you know, excited to represent Kerry at League of Ireland level. And I suppose in terms of the coaching side, look, we have a fantastic group of people that have been involved in the coaching side for many, many years, and a lot of those are transitioning up into the first team now as well. So it's really just a continuity, Donal, of what we have in place already, which is great as well, because it shows that progression for not only the players, but for the coaches within the club.
Breaking down the weekend sporting action, this is Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Now, welcome back to the final segment of tonight's Terrace Talk special. And just before we finish up this evening, I want to thank a number of people who helped me out through the year. Producer Ivan Hurley, and of course, soundman Keane O'Doherty. Both have been really there at all times for me. And we really had an outstanding first season, I suppose. Now, to look back at some of the best bits of that season, and to finish up this evening, we've put through a lovely compilation of highlights for you. Happy New Year, and bye for now.
There was fair disappointment coming home, I can tell you that now. And there was a few fair arguments coming down the bus, down halfways, about the standard of the type of football Kerry were playing and this and that. Yeah. But we were happy enough with the draw after, like, you know. Yeah.
It's great that we got over the line, like you mentioned, they're number 23 for the school, but as we said to the lads, it's number one for them. And I think that's what counts long term for them, when they look back in about 20 or 30 years, that they'll have their Corn Newbury medal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they'll be able to look back on that as a team as well.
Tipperary came at us again, and they brought it back to a point. And we got the next ball, Owen Ross in the wing, and he took a shoulder, knocked a Tipperary man down, and won a free himself. And the crowd got behind him straight away, and that was worth gold. The lift it gave us, even the management on the sideline, and the subs, but the players themselves. And for the next 15 minutes, not in good phase of Spacey. The lads' backs were up, they were moving, and the crowd is a huge thing. So we hope, obviously, we get as many hurling supporters there on Sunday against Kildare, and we hope to give them something to shout about.
It has been a wonderful journey.
for the community. In fact, the last day I noticed a few from the community had their little poodles with them as well. So even the four-legged little poodles and cats and dogs are part of the thing as well. It's a wonderful journey, wonderful, wonderful journey. And it's about the, you know, it's about not the treasure and the glory of the little village, really. And I suppose it's only when you go to a strange place you realise how special the whole thing of community and togetherness is. Like, it has been a lovely, lovely journey, and the team have played very well, and they have been wonderful ambassadors, really, for the club. It's more about, it's more than about hurling, it's about a people, a community.
I had a conversation there with Shane Lowry over in Scotland for one of my first European tour events, and he kind of asked me how I was finding it, and I was like, you know, it's not all sunshine and rainbows, and he just goes, don't worry, it will be soon. So I think that kind of emphasised the fact that it is pretty nice up there when you can get to the top. So yeah, I suppose I just have to keep my head down now and make sure that I do get there, because I'm pretty sure it's what I want to be doing.
There's something different, there's something brewing inside in the Kerry management and the Kerry panel, and like I said, it seems to be going in the right direction.
David Clifford is mentioned every week, and he should be, but like, Aaron Calixte is our David Clifford, and he went down to the academy, Nico went down to the academy, and there's I guarantee you there's five or six kids in either academy that as a result of them will come through, and they will say, I remember when he used to come down, he used to dunk the ball and he used to do this, and that really set me alight for basketball.
Exceptional hurler. The breeding was there, as they say. Nolan's name is famous in Crossland and Kerry hurling and Munster hurling back through the generations, and he's always been a great servant for Kerry. And like myself, I'll always have great respect for any fellow who wears a Kerry jersey. And he never, a lot of times he never has dealt with a Kerry jersey, in fairness to him. He's always an excellent servant of Kerry.
Jack O'Connor has been well known for picking players on training form as much as anything when it comes up to a big match, you know. There's no guarantee that some fella who was flying out of his skin on April the 3rd is still going to be flying out of his skin on May 6th or 7th.
I'm definitely not finished. I want to keep going, getting better. Like, the final yesterday, I was obviously delighted to get there, but I was a bit disappointed with the result. I know there was more in me. I was a bit more, I think I should have finished higher than I did. I just didn't perform at the time. So I definitely think with more training and hopefully more experiences of international or even with the relays, I'll get further up and grow my levels and experiences and stuff like that.
I never saw a real hard, brave man win anything.
Yeah.
And you know, there's an awful lot of talk spoke about fellas can do this and they'd beat that and they'd beat this and that. Play the ball, keep the ball moving and forget about it. I didn't see any soft spot in one. And if somebody says to me that Kerry are soft, then they never played against them.
We're like a small community as a team in itself, like almost like a small family, really. So we really depend on locals and local support to get us where we want to be. And I suppose encouraging people to come, let them see what we're all about and see that we're worth, you know, we're worth to follow and we're worth to watch and all that.
When you're going to training with Kerry, you have an ambition of winning All-Ireland. You know, when Billy Lee gets the boys back into the dressing rooms and, you know, next week, he'll have to have an ambition for them. What's their ambition? You know, they're not going to win Sam Maguire. You know, and I think that's a lot of problem in a lot of the weaker counties, is to keep players playing into county football. Like Stephen made the point, what is there for Limerick to win?
Yeah, I think it's awesome. I think, you know, I've come to appreciate the fact that a lot of these guys do it because they love the game of basketball. And, you know, it's not probably anywhere in the top three in terms of the biggest sports here in Ireland. So I think it's really cool to see. And it's a different experience in the locker room after each game. You know, it's been awesome to get to know them outside of basketball. They're all great people also, which has been a huge plus. I think just the fact that they're playing the game because they love basketball, no one's forcing them to do this, I think that's what I've appreciated the most.
I often tell young fellas, I have won 5 All-Ireland medals, 4 or 5 National League medals, Railway Cup medals, college medals, everything. and my mother used to store them all away. I haven't seen them since I won them. They're kind of, you know, they're not, when you get to 70, they're not that relevant. But what's really relevant are the friends you've made. Absolutely. And the experience you've had in that time. And look, that's coming from an old man now. And that message should go out to people.
A lot of people talking about joining up Shannon Rangers and Field Rangers. Maybe did the message come out the weekend that we want to keep our own identity and keep working away? Yeah. And on the evidence of what we saw, fair play to them. And, you know, great credit to Martin Mahoney and Kevin Welsh and Cathal O'Connor, because they were under a lot of pressure. A lot of players missing. They circled the wagons and they certainly put pride back into the jersey, even though we lost.
The ref as well would have a very, very strong word with you. If you said anything out of the way, or if you questioned his authority, you questioned his decision making, like, it's just, it's only going to affect yourself. Like, you essentially are going to be the one to get penalised after something like that, saying something out of the way. There's no place for it on the pitch. No one looks at you and goes, yeah. Like, when have you ever changed a referee's mind? You know, like, it's of no benefit to you, and especially of no benefit to your team.
I was blessed with good healing. Healing, particularly bone healing, is in your genes, it's in your blood. You either have it or you don't have it. And as I mentioned already, we've got Kerry blood in me and some Clare blood. I was very fortunate that the leg healed quite well.
The Cork management, at the moment, if they could take us into Mahon Fine Shopping Centre, they'd do it at the way they're playing at the moment. Things are not motoring well from, so they'd be happy enough to bring us into a nice tight field and see can they hold on to us. If they did take us into Mahon Shopping Centre, Donald, we'd still be better.